Welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive arts show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Each week we bring you a variety of interviews and music from across the arts world, from theatre to books, events to exhibitions. We've got it all covered. And tonight we're covering the team from Taupo's Racists Anonymous, Auckland Uni's 2,401 Objects, plus we check in with Sharon for some book reviews, and we meet author Alison Wong of A Clear Dawn. Now, kicking off the music today, a bit of Deltra Goodrum for a change with the well-known You're the Voice. This was from the Music from the Homefront 2021 Anzac Day concert. The wonderful Doutra Goodrum from the Homefront 2021 Anzac Day concert. And Emma, she was playing that the whole way through as well. It's a beautiful music video. Check it out on YouTube. It's pretty special.
Cool. I remember singing that song when I was quite young in the good old APAA choir.
Oh, nice. Nice. How was your week?
Actually, I was just sitting here a second ago thinking, do you know that I haven't seen a show this week? I think this must be the first week, like, all year that I haven't been to a show unless there's been lockdown.
Oh, that's just not good enough.
I know. I'm actually quite shocked. You know, he says wagging his finger at me because I didn't go and see his show this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I had a busy week. Mm. 12 sellout season. How cool is that to get a sellout season these days? It's pretty awesome. 12 shows of The Sound of Music, 120 teenagers tonight, very tired and sleepy, and probably trying to convince their parents to have tomorrow off school, but go to school because otherwise they won't let you do it next year. So, yeah, pretty cool week. Pack out today and, yeah, feeling a little jaded, but we've got a studio of smiley, happy people, and that'll get us through the night.
It sure will.
So, who have we got tonight, Emma?
Oh, am I doing the introductions tonight, am I? So, we've got Danny and Alex from Auckland Uni's postgrad 700 paper. 701.
Wow.
710. 710. Oh, my God.
Been selling it well so far.
Let's try that again. We'll try that again. We've got Danny and Alex from Auckland University's postgrad 710 drama paper, who are here to talk about their upcoming production of 2,401 objects, which is quite a long, you know.
Yeah.
Quite a mouth.
We'll be unpacking that shortly.
It's a lot of objects. And then from Topose Racist Anonymous, we've got Acacia. And I'm really scared I'm going to say this wrong.
It's all good.
Tuakoi?
Tuakoi. Yeah.
Tuakoi.
Tuakoi.
Yeah.
There we go.
Brilliant.
So welcome.
Yeah, great to have you all here, guys. And Racists Anonymous, we talked about a couple of weeks on the show because it pricked our interest in our email. It's sounding like a very interactive, thought-provoking show with a touch of humour. Am I right?
It is all of that, yeah.
Exactly.
So just come nice and close to your mics for us. So tell us, what's it all about?
Racism, as you might expect. So we've spent the last 4 weeks kind of just having really deep conversations about racism, unpacking things. Yeah. It's actually been quite a scary process. Kind of come to the conclusion that today our younger generation in particular, there's kind of an allowed point of view that you're allowed to have, and cancel culture and social media and thousands of people who are going to jump on you if you say anything kind of wrong has made it quite scary and quite tricky to make, especially a comedy show about racism. But we've got one and we're pretty proud of it and it's pretty cool. So yeah, it's set up like a circle, like a Alcoholics Anonymous or anything else anonymous kind of situation. Everyone that comes in is treated as if they are a racist. And we will talk to them about the things that we're proud of them for achieving and the things that they did wrong last week and that they said all that kind of thing. Tuakoi and I we're quite outrageous characters, so this is where the comedy comes.
We're probably the most outrageous characters, and the other three are still pretty crazy as well, but a lot more chill than us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, expect to have things in your face.
So are you using the idea of comedy and making people laugh at kind of, in some ways, I suppose, what's stereotypical, isn't it? Like, and it's, we take it for granted.
Yes.
And so out of that laughter is the hope for change?
That's the plan. Racism is talked about a lot at the moment, but not so much in a comedy way. And the idea of our characters being so kind of enlarged, the idea is that people will feel more safe and more able to laugh. Mm. And then, but at the end of the show, I shouldn't give it away too much, there is room for kind of unpacking some of the truth of the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
In there, yeah.
Pretty much.
It'll be really interesting to see how audiences react. I mean, the humour, but given the content, there may be that awkwardness of, I really want to laugh, but I'm keeping it in.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I'd love to be a fly on the wall just watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watching the human reaction to it.
And that's kind of what happened when, like, if I think back quite a few years now, like when Oscar Kightley brought out Nucilla, you know, which of course that whole idea of that over exaggerated stereotypical characters and that was very much, you know, calling a spade in a Pacific Islander dumb, you know, and things like, and it was very in your face, you know, to make you again. And it was quite interesting because I, with that show, I went to a kids matinee and then I went to a adult show and of course ATC adult show, very blue rinse, you know, very under there, whereas the kids were just riotous, thought it was hilarious. You know, so it's quite interesting seeing the different reactions to being allowed to laugh as
Absolutely,
With the development of this in 2019, we've had to change it a lot because so much has happened since then. But in 2019, even the audience then, we found the white people in the room kind of just sat there a little bit awkwardly. And the brown people had the riotous laughing going on all the Māori and the Pacifica whānau. It was quite interesting to see that.
So that's interesting. A 2019 workshop, and of course since then Black Lives Matters. So has that been a big thing that's caused this shift in what you've had to do in 2021?
Absolutely. It's just required us to, not that it wasn't thought through when we initially made it, but just to think deeper, go deeper.
We had to turn it into a different narrative completely, so we just wanted to make it really relevant and open up the conversations that of all the things that have been happening, even just in our country. A lot of racism has happened and, you know,
on a weekly basis, pulling up things that are going on everywhere.
I think often too, so much rate of racism is actually people don't even realise they're doing it, right?
Absolutely.
Until sometimes you call people out, and then it's kind of like, oh, but I didn't mean it that way.
It's all that conditioning in society,
the cliche of it. But you know, I was reading a thing yesterday saying that kids from 3 months are already looking at people that have the same skin colour as their parents, and then by the age of 3 they're choosing playmates based off that kind of thing
and how they look, and
and then they were saying that studies have shown that white kids are doing it more than other kids. They're kind of choosing, they're making class associations and that sort of thing already at the age of 5. So it's not conscious at that point, but it's so we all there's an acknowledgement that has to happen to be able to look at that in order to be able to change, which is happening everywhere, but it's just continuing the conversation.
It's like a few weeks ago, I can't even remember what we were talking about, I'd mentioned about the diversity panel that I had done at Music Theatre New Zealand, and the comment that was made, if you can't see your face in the place, why would you want to be in that place? So that's that kind of thing of if there's not educational resources in that are showing all colour, you know, kids are being brought up with white dolls, white books. So that's what they think is right.
Or even just normal, which is dangerous to have that be the norm.
Well, we're going to have some fun unpacking your story and a little later talk a little bit more about your characters. We've got a lot jammed into the first part of the show, but we'll relax a little later and get some more information. Quickly now, turning to 2,401 objects. What's that all about, Danny?
Well, basically, this is a story based on a real-life case, which was basically the most famous case in neuroscience history, essentially, and our story follows Henry Molaison. I don't know, some of you may have studied him in psychology, things like that. He, in 1953, underwent an operation for his epilepsy to remove his hippocampi, assuming that that was going to help stop the seizures, but instead he lost the ability to form any new conscious memories for essentially the rest of his life, and also lost a lot of his childhood as well. So basically every 30 seconds is a new memory for him and a new life. And yeah, he died in 2008, was it? Yeah. And his brain was sliced up into 2,401 pieces live streamed on the internet in those days in order to study it, because this was the first time that it kind of people realized that the brain was, like, the hippocampus was connected to memory and things like that. So this was an, like, absolutely exceptional case. So in order for it to be studied, he was slice into that many objects, a lot of objects. So
wow, I had the image of objects being things.
I was going into a theatre space with lots of props everywhere, and this mad story happening in the middle. I don't want to see over 2,000 bits of brain.
No, so, they would have been quite small too by the time
you very, very, very thinly sliced.
So what is it for audiences? What are we coming to?
Alex, do you want to answer that one?
So essentially, because patient HM had such complete privacy once he had become a unique case, after his death it became known that his name was Henry Mallason, and his, you know, chief scientist who sort of took custody of him more or less was Suzanne Corkin, and she wrote a biography. But until that biography was released, nothing was known about him. And this group in Britain, Analogue, decided, well, we want to see the human element of this story, of this person that's given us so much. So this is an interpretation of what Henry's life was, the circumstances that led him to have a lobotomy, essentially, and what his life was after the fact.
Wow. And who's performing in this?
Everyone.
Yeah, so we've got our class of eight for our postgraduate course at the University of Auckland. So we're doing all the roles and we're also doing all the behind the scenes. I'm also the head of sound, and Alex is also the stage manager. So we're all sort of, thrown in there. So it's a really amazing experience being able to be immersed on stage and like off stage as well. And just kind of the whole process has been so just like a learning experience, nice, really, for us, which has been awesome.
And what is the course? I know you've said postgrad studies, but specifically?
This is our honours in drama, and it's just one of the papers we take is called production, like semester one production. So, yeah, it was just our lecturer was like, yeah, we're doing this play, and sort of went from there, and, yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
So is your course predominantly practical, or is it a bit of practical and academic theory? What makes up the whole course?
This semester we have another course on playwriting, which has been really cool, and then next semester is our giant thesis, which will be fun, and then there's an opportunity to do like another one. I think there's an ethics and theatre course, which will be really cool. So elements of it is quite practical, and then elements of it aren't, so it's kind of like a good mix, which is really awesome, and a fun change from undergrad, I think, which is like quite theoretical. So yeah, being cool to kind of have a bit more freedom in that educational sense.
And where do you want to go with it? When you leave, you graduated, where are you heading? What do you want to do?
Yeah, big question time.
I'm hoping to go into drama teaching. Whoop, whoop. Alex, what are you hoping to do?
At the moment I work a full-time job in administration, so I'm pretty open to see where things go. I enjoy making plaster masks. I like doing, you know, odd projects, and probably go get my master's. I'll just see where it goes.
Nice. All right, we've got some big unpacking to do tonight, Emma. Very interesting guest in the studio. We're going to switch now to books for a little bit and then spend the rest of the show chatting to our wonderful studio guests. We've got Sharon rearing to give us some book reviews because we haven't caught up with her for a while with all these Fringe and Comedy Fest shows that we've been interviewing. And then we're chatting with author Alison Wong. So while we get them on the phone, here is Suzanne Boyle and Elaine Page with I Know Him So Well.
Nothing is so good, it lasts eternally. Perfect situations must go wrong. But this has never yet prevented me wanting far too much for far too long. Looking back, I could have played it differently. One a few more moments, who can tell? But it took time to understand the man. Now at least I know him well. Wasn't it girl so good? But in the end, he needs a little
life is with you constantly. No one is completely on your side. And though I'd move my world to be with him, still the gap between us is too wide.
Suzanne Boyle and Elaine Page with I Know Him So Well from Chess. Everybody in the studio was singing, and I would put money Sharon singing on the phone.
Of course she would have been.
Good evening, Sharon. How are you tonight?
Very well, thank you. How are you two?
Good. Were you singing along?
Absolutely. It's an improvement on the last song that you had last time I was on.
Yes, you weren't a fan of that one. Brilliant. So we haven't had you on for a while because we've had so many shows with the Fringe Festival. But in this time, you've been busy reading, reading, reading. Our wonderful authors have been sending so many books in. So over the next few weeks, we'll try and catch up on a few. What two are you going to chat to us tonight about?
The first one is The Nine Lives of Kitty Kay, cool. Which I must admit to being the first book I've read that the author is 91 years of age.
That is cool.
It was pretty impressive, really.
Nice.
Take all these years. She said when she was 18, she was determined to publish a novel, and she did it, 91.
Yes, I remember trying to arrange the interview, Emma, with her, but it was not an option. It was too late at night to possibly do that. So tell us all about the book.
So it's actually a story that she'd heard many, many years ago about a woman who was arguably the toughest woman in the Otago history. And it goes through her story basically about the terrible depression of the 1890s and just the terrible lives that they actually lived and how they survived. It was actually quite a heart-wrenching story, really. She had some good times and she had some really, really bad times. I liked it. But it was really well written. If it took her 91 years, maybe she writes another one.
Who do you think it appeals to?
Anyone, actually. I think it's quite interesting to know the history of those Goldfield days and how tough they really were. So young to quite old to read it, really.
Nice.
The idea of
it's a really nice story.
The idea of a shotgun marriage as well is probably not a common thing these days. Mm.
Oh, and the way, absolutely. And the way she was treated and just, well, women in particular, I think, in that era. Breeding all these children to some man that was pretty horrible, it was, yeah.
Mm.
And as it says too, often by herself for long periods of time.
She did, and she did like at the very end a wee whiskey or about 50, I think. But that was probably the way she survived.
Yeah. It's interesting you say, you know, that you felt the book moved you. It was heartfelt. Yeah. What is it about a style of writing that moves you in that way?
It was really probably the way that she wrote it was you could picture that yourself there and heartfelt because the trauma that she went through and the just the terrible things that happened to her, you were really in the moment, I suppose. It was, yeah.
Nice. And your second book is addressed to Gretel.
Greta,
who we interviewed the author a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was only Greta.
And now tell us about this one.
Unusual story. It was about an unfortunate girl that was 30-something who basically had a particularly boring life, worked in the same job for 22 years, had a pet chicken called Marilyn Monroe, which was quite unusual, I suppose, lived in Devonport. And had this friend who passed away and left her all these wonderful surprise trips. And she'd receive a letter and it would tell her where she was off to. She'd never left New Zealand. She'd never had a passport. Yeah. She kind of was, her mother was a real overpowering, overbearing woman who kept, you know, pulling her back and telling her that she was never going to be anything. And so she was no expectations, no disappointment had been her mother's mantra. And she pretty much lived like that until this friend had passed away. And she had no idea. He was actually quite sad. He was gay. I'm assuming he died of AIDS. She didn't actually say that in the book. But
it says that he was dying of, he died of cancer is what I'm looking at the moment.
Yeah, oh, well, I think if you read the book, it kind of insinuates she wasn't really quite sure whether it was one or the other. Mm. It was really, she gets taken out of herself. She goes on these most amazing trips. She meets some incredible people and learns a lot about the friend that she thought she actually knew so much about. She didn't know where she was going. So she went to New York, then she went to London. Then she went to Rwanda, which she'd always talked about. And then she came home, and then it was funny how she didn't quite fit in when she got back either. Her life that she went back to the pool shop where she'd worked for 22 years, and she only lasted a week and she left again.
Wow.
So it opened all these new doors for her.
Yeah, yeah. So out of 10, what are you giving these books, Nine Lives and Address to Greta?
Probably break them about a 7, both of them actually.
Okay. That's pretty good in your rankings.
Not bad for my ranking, is it? Yep. I actually enjoyed both of them.
Well, you got
quite different.
You got past the first page this time.
I did actually. You're so right, Stephen. Thanks for pointing that out. I did. I read the whole book, both of them.
Sharon gets so dramatic, Emma, that she's known to throw books across the office and smash things.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
if she doesn't like it, that book goes flying.
What,
watch
you?
Out your teacup. Yeah.
Yeah, I did replace it, though.
You did.
And I did buy you a whole lot of tea to go with the teacup that I broke. And the only reason, Emma, that it actually got broken is because he ducked.
Yeah, if I'd let it hit me, I would have been, the teacup would have been fine. Yeah.
I'm brilliant. So glad that you guys have such a loving relationship in your office.
Brilliant, Sharon. We appreciate that. We'll catch up with you again soon with the next two books. And a huge thank you to all our wonderful authors and publishers that keep sending them in. If you've got a book you'd like to send to us, get in touch. Have a good rest of your Sunday night, Sharon.
Thank you very much. And look forward to reading some wonderful books.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care. Do we have avid book readers in the room tonight, in the studio?
What do you like to read, Alex?
Quite a lot.
What's your favourite type of book? Just trying to pad that out of it.
I quite enjoy horror genre or historical.
Mm. Okay. Mm. What is it about horror that in a book? For me, you know, I need to see horror rather than read it.
Right, well, I think psychological horror can be quite effectively written, and I think when I was doing my undergraduate, my horror media lecturer said to me, no one knows why we like horror, which I'm sure, like, people have tried very hard to answer, but I just haven't read their work, so I'm just interested in seeing if there's anything I can find that jumps out and says, yeah, this is actually why this is such a thriving genre and why people enjoy it.
Nice. Okay, any other avid readers in the room?
One of my favourite authors is Dean Koontz, okay. Psychological thriller, a little bit, not as intense, but he's one of my favourite authors, and I could read anything that he writes, so he's my favourite, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your characters before we get Alison on the line. Who's going first? Tell us a little bit more about the characters in Racist Anonymous.
I'll go first. So, so my character's name, original name, is Elizabeth Moore. But she goes by Erihapiti Atu, and if you're fluent in Te Reo Māori, you realise how ridiculous that actually sounds. And she is, she used to be Caucasian, so she used to identify herself as Caucasian, back, not since 2020, that she's now Māori. She now identifies herself as Māori, and just ever since all these crazy things have happened, it's become a bit of a risk to be a white person, so she decided to appropriate Māori culture.
Oh.
Yeah. And she's pretty... She's really, really intense. Her only purpose in the play is to stir things up and bully everyone.
But also pretty kudos much. To her, right? Like, she has gone out of her way to learn Māori and kapa haka and
Māori. And the history, and she's taken it very, very seriously.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And under all the craziness, there is sort of a goodness about it, that she genuinely does respect Māori culture and people. It's just that she's just gone about it in a crazy way. So, but she's very, very fun. I love playing her. She's been one of my favourite characters, actually. So I don't want to give away too much. You just have to come and watch and see what she does to you.
And your character?
I play a character called Ariel, named after the Little Mermaid. And she... her dilemma is rather sad, actually. She doesn't know... She's pregnant, and she doesn't know who the father is. And there's a chance that it could be a brown man. And she's terrified that she won't be able to love her baby if it's brown, which is ridiculous but sad at the same time. And so, yeah, she's there to try to find answers and meet some brown people. And she's pretty outrageous. And she's also just very kind of naive, and people are picking on her, but she doesn't notice, and she just kind of continues. Yeah, she's quite terrible.
You've both mentioned a few times about sort of, you know, the interactiveness, I guess, of the audience. Is this fully scripted, or is there moments that you're going to have to go with whatever comes from the audience, or is it scripted and the audience interaction is more just that it's in your face?
Both.
If the
audience doesn't interact at all, that's still something. You know, we can work off a blank face.
Right.
But if they do give us something, that'll be great. That'll be exciting to see what happens.
So people don't need to be intimidated not to come.
No, you don't have to say anything.
But if they feel like it, that can happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Sounds interesting. You mentioned in the music break before you've got a test audience situation tomorrow. So I guess you're looking forward to really testing how those reactions go.
Absolutely, seeing if people get angry.
Yeah,
that's kind of a fun option, but also laughing's a fun option. We kind of just have no idea how it's going to land with people.
I think we need to get these guys back in a few weeks' time. I'll be really
curious. Well, we're going to be touring it around Northland as well, so that'll be really fun.
Yeah.
But we are here rehearsing another show for 3 weeks, so if you've got time to bring us back on, that'd be cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a music break so we can get our author on the line. And because Emma's telling me off for musical theatre, we'll go the exact opposite now. With Dance Away These Days by the wonderful Kiwi artist Harper Finn.
Does it feel the same when you play the game alone? Scared to make another move. You don't wanna fall around the mirror ball again. I know what you mean. You want the world to stay. You want the world to stay. You want the world to stay.
I wanna float in space with the music up. I wanna dance away these days. And if you feel the same, put the phone away and just dance away these days. Lost in a crowd, looking for someone to hold. Falling to your knees. You want the world to stay. You want the world to stay. You want the world to stay. Still. Someday the dark side of the moon will see the light. I wanna float in space with the music up. I wanna dance away these days. And if you feel the same, put the phone away and just dance away these days. I want to bring you home back from the twilight zone. I wanna float in space with the music of. I wanna dance away these days. And if you feel the same, put the phone away and just dance away these days. I wanna float in space with the music of. I wanna dance away these days.
The wonderful Harper Finn with Dance Away These Days. Nice tune there. And Emma, carrying on our book theme tonight, we now have the editor or co-editor, Alison Wong, of A Clear Dawn, New Asian Voices from Aotearoa, New Zealand. Welcome to the show, Alison.
Hello.
Great to have you here, and this is a very different book to land across our desk. Thank you so much. Produced with Auckland University Press, tell us a little bit about what A Clear Dawn is about.
It's the first ever anthology of creative writing, that's poetry, fiction, and memoir and personal essays, by Asian New Zealanders, and there are 75 writers in there. We have chosen emerging writers rather than really established ones. That being said, there are quite a lot of writers in there that are quite well known already. Nina Mingyao-Powles was just shortlisted for the Ockham New Zealand Book Awards for poetry. Chris Tees won Best First Book for Poetry, and Gregory Kahn also was shortlisted for poetry a few years ago and longlisted for poetry. And then we had have Sharon Lamb, who was longlisted for her novel, and I know that Rose Liu has had a lot of publicity, but we've actually got such a diverse group of people from with all kinds of heritages throughout Asia, but all New Zealanders, sometimes not necessarily currently living in New Zealand, but always with very strong connections.
And when you say diverse writers, diverse topics too. I mean, your publicity says it covers everything from rituals of food and family to sexual politics, from issues around displacement and identity to teen suicide and revenge attacks, right through to funerals, affairs, accidents, friendships, crimes, jealousies, small victories, devastating losses. This is a real mix.
Very much so. And it was a very deliberate policy on our part. We went for quality writing, but also we wanted diversity in every way possible to show, you know, how many different kinds of styles, themes, voices, subject matter, geographic location, you know, not all of this, the creative work has got so-called Asian themes. Some, you could read it and you wouldn't know that the person has an Asian background because, you know, we're just New Zealanders like everyone else, you know. We're free to write whatever we write. And we chose accordingly.
And what a fantastic coincidental drop that you dropped this book at the same time as Auckland Theatre Company's Single Asian Female was playing as well.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of crossover here. You know, a lot of our writers are very multi-talented and they work across multiple art forms and literary forms. So there are a number here who work in theatre in performance poetry and slam and, you know, are very much involved in, like, for instance, Proudly Asian Theatre and all of these wonderful, vibrant art groups that New Zealand has. Some of them are musicians, some of them are artists. You know, it's a real mixture.
Who do you think will pick up this book? Who are you aiming this at?
We're actually aiming it at everyone.
Yeah, I thought you might say that, because it feels like it would appeal right across the board.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an encouragement, obviously, to the Asian population of New Zealand to actually be published in a mainstream, with a mainstream publisher and to get the media attention. And it's fabulous for those who are so new to writing in the sense that they haven't got a mainstream audience yet, or at least not before this, and they are not well known. But, you know, I think there's something for everyone in this. It's, you may find if you read this that, oh, that's not to my taste, but this is. Mm. And the whole point is to show how different we are and also to show off the so many different ways that we write and the such different ways that we create.
Now, you've edited this with Paula Morris, so what was your connection to come together?
Paula teaches at Auckland University Creative Writing. She convenes the master's program as well as teaching the undergraduates. And for some years I've been an external examiner for the master's program, and we've sort of collaborated on a few different things like that. And she was very aware of the amazing literary talents of so many of the students she teaches of diverse backgrounds, including Asian backgrounds. I mean, she's very, very supportive of all kinds of people, regardless of their background and their colour. And because she had so many Asian students who were so incredibly talented but were unknown, she talked to me and said, shall we do this together as a partnership of tangata whenua and tau iwi? And, you know, I had seen the talent already as well as I had connections. I see my hometown as Wellington, she's Auckland, and we tried to get across the whole country as much as we were able to. And we reached out everywhere we could, trying to, you know, ask people to submit from anywhere, telling everyone we could think of, you know, going to you know, online journals, people who teach migrant writers, going just wherever we could, creative writing programs as well. But, you know, there were real grassroots people, and the word just spread everywhere, and we just got a huge number of submissions, and that was really difficult having to choose.
Yeah.
Plus, it's, you know, we found out about people after we'd had to select as well. And we thought, oh, no, would have loved to have had that person in there and this person.
It's always good to leave people wanting more. Leave people wanting more and create the next one. And you're no stranger to books. I mean, your novel, As the Earth Turns Silver, won the 2010 New Zealand Post Book Award for fiction and was shortlisted for the Australian Prime Minister's Literacy Awards. And I should say, you actually live between Australia and New Zealand. I don't even know where I'm calling you tonight. Are you in New Zealand?
I'm in Auckland.
You're in Auckland tonight. Oh, excellent. So what's next on the horizon for you in this book world?
Well, I'm going around the country right now promoting this book because it's just been launched at the Auckland Writers Festival yesterday, and we've got events in Wellington at Unity Books on Thursday the 27th of May, 6 o'clock. We've got Napier at the Napier Public Library on the 3rd of June, Thursday, 6 p.m. We've got Dunedin on the 10th of June, Thursday, 6 p.m. at the Dunedin City Library. We're also doing Arrowtown and Wanaka the day before on the 9th of June. There's an Arrowtown at the museum, and in Wanaka at the there's a cinema there. And sorry, we've only just found out we've got the funding, so I haven't been able to organise it all. We're going to Invercargill on the 11th, Friday the 11th, and doing something there in the evening. I think we might be going to Riverton. we're doing lots
You're doing the rounds. Is there a website or a social media page people can head to if they want to find out more?
If you go to the Auckland University Press website, I think what I can do is I can get Auckland University Press to send you through some links so that you can put it up.
We'll pop it up on our social media, absolutely.
Yeah, and they can give you Facebook links and all that sort of stuff.
Yep, no problem. Yep. Flick that through and we'll get that up this week for our listeners. And
that'd be great. And, you know, this has just taken more than 2 years of my life doing it, so I haven't had a lot of time for my own writing. But, you know, I'm hopeful that I'm going to get back to writing my memoir and another novel and more poetry.
That's fantastic. All right, look, it's been wonderful chatting to you. We wish you every success with A Clear Dawn. It's available now. It's distributed by Upstart, but it's part of Auckland University Press. And, yeah, we look forward to hearing the success of your tour and the book. It sounds absolutely fantastic. And our reviewer, Sharon, will have a read in a few weeks' time and give us an update as well.
Thank you so much.
No, thanks for taking the time to chat to us tonight. Have a great rest of your Sunday evening.
Thank you. You too.
Cool. Thanks,
Bye.
Alison. Sounded really different, Emma. It's a nice, you know, quite a different. I'd be curious to get Sharon's take on that.
Yeah, and like she said, because there's all different styles, there may be parts that don't resonate, but
you can skip on probably.
If there's that many writers and extracts and things, there must be something in there for everyone, like Alison said.
Yeah, absolutely. Back now with our wonderful studio guests, and I'm curious now to unpack the 2,401 objects a little bit more. Try and walk me through what the performance looks like. How would you describe what an audience member is going to come to?
It's a pretty big question. We've essentially got three worlds intertwining, which makes for really interesting theatre, I feel. We've got sort of a pre-Operation Henry, we've got a post-Operation Henry, and we've also got kind of post-death, I guess, Henry world, where we've got kind of the doctors. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how else to describe it other than it just being kind of a bit of an experience. It's like we really want to teach people. We want them to learn about this case. And then we also, I think it's for us, it's really important that we're kind of presenting a story and like a community, I guess, that isn't represented in theatre often. Like we've been really interested in kind of the idea of providing accessible theatre and whatnot. And we actually have a Relax show on our Saturday 2 p.m. season, which, yeah, Alex can talk to more maybe. It's a really important thing that we've been working quite hard on. So, yeah.
What's that? What's a relaxed show?
Do you want to chat about that?
Oh. Hi. So, essentially, a relaxed show is a special type of performance that is essentially what it sounds like. It's relaxed. You can think that traditional theatre boxes you in quite a bit. There is a very rigid set of expectations of how to behave in a theatre and all that. A relaxed show strips all that away. There's more space around the seats. The doors are left open. The house lights are left on. You are allowed to make noise. You're allowed to move around as needed. It's essentially just something that places like ATC and Court Theatre are picking up and running with, where it's just for people that may have sensory issues autism or brain injuries, and theatre traditionally locks that sort of thing out, and that's not right.
Or they come and the person that's brought them feels uncomfortable in that space because everyone else is conformed to those seats and so quiet. Mm. As actors, though, that's tests your focus. I've been in that environment myself. You've got to absolutely be 100% focused. You ready for that challenge?
I have every faith in the cast because we all believe in it being such an important thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we kind of went to it with like, why would we make a show about a brain injury, like someone with a brain injury, if someone with a brain injury couldn't come watch the show? So we kind of like, that was sort of through our whole process, was like, this is really important and we want to treat this with respect, and we also want to treat our audiences with respect and give them back sort of like what Henry's given to us, I guess. So that's been really important to us.
So as students, you talked about the learning experience. What's the biggest things you're learning so far through this process? What's your takeaway so far?
What a broad question. I hope our course conveners like listening right now.
Yeah, we'll give you a mark at the end of the interview.
Yeah, so essentially we get graded on, you know, our work, essentially, making the show and then our actual performance of it. You do stage management, but in this particular show I'm acting, which is a first, and I'm also doing sound operation, which is another first. So those are some practical skills I'm learning. I'm also
learning to multitask too, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, nobody leaves the stage at any point. So all tech operators, lighting operators are also acting, and oh boy, is it full on. We've also had the very wonderful chance to learn from a lot of industry professionals, like Ben Henson's directing. Sheree Moore has very kindly done some voice lessons with us. Mm. And Sean, I don't know his last name, has been in to help us with lighting and tech.
Cool. Yeah. What's been your biggest takeaway?
I mean, definitely the practical skills have been amazing. I mean, these people have a wealth of knowledge that is just, like, amazing to learn from. I also think, I think for me, like, it's been amazing to learn about accessible theatre. I think that's been really cool to be, you know, I feel like when I go to shows in the future, it's going to be like, if I, like, could I have watched this if I was someone suffering from a brain injury or things like that? It's like kind of like you have to think about these things, and I think that kind of that has been really important and like interesting to learn about, and the sort of the things that maybe isn't your first priority when you're like, oh, I'm going to be in the show and it's going to be so cool and I'm going to like be a star or whatever. You're like, actually, like, you know, theatre has to be so accessible and it's so important that everyone can come watch it. So that's been like a really awesome thing to like, not saying I didn't know that, but like just kind of expanding on that and like learning how to actually do that. And like in the future, I think I know that like this would just be something that I know I would have to incorporate into any shows, into like that I do, you know, and I'd really encourage like everyone to do the same. I don't know why I'm like preaching here, but I mean, it's important.
It's important.
No, I love that so much. Tuakoi and I both actually work with a theatre company that
goes around schools and educators around neurodiversity and this sort of thing. So
awesome.
They're called Mind Over Matter, and they'd be so interested to come to your show
whenever
it is.
Have to hit them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also my brother has autism, so and he's a theatre maker and he's a theatre lover as well, so he's going to really appreciate those kind of shows. So
awesome.
You guys are amazing. Just really want to you know, want to support you guys and and hope you know how incredible you guys are.
Thank you, that's cool. So tell us about your background in the arts. Okay, so should we start with you? What's led you along this path and journey?
Gosh, well, my parents were musicians, so there are pictures of me as a baby sitting in my dad's guitar case and people giving me money for being cute. It's not as
clever
easy as
dad, good money making.
Yeah, exactly. then I went to drama school, Toi Whakaari, down in Wellington, 2015, graduated there a couple of years ago. And actually it's really awesome to be coming back to doing work with Te Pō, because they were my first professional employers in the arts. I'm just feeling really passionate about making Māori work at the moment. I've been really loving I've had a lot of awesome opportunities to do lots of cool things over the last few years. But, coming back to Te Pō, working with Auckland Theatre Company on the Haka Party incident. I was a teaching artist there. So all of these conversations around racism are really feeling like the important ones to be having at the moment. And neurodiversity, actually. So, finding the kind of underneath the why that takes it out of the ego kind of realm for me at the moment is what's really interesting. To answer your question, how did I get into it? I don't know. I was just always going to do it. I was going to do something in the arts, and here I am, which is really cool.
Nice. And you're finding enough work and mixture of work since you've graduated?
Yeah. Oh, actually, last year I was able to finally pat myself on the back for not being a waitress. even though I loved I was working at Coco's Cantina, and they are amazing, but it's so nice to just be an artist at the moment, actually.
And you deserve that. That's what you've gone through the whole program for.
Yeah, got to do it all, you know. And nice. There's definitely work out there, and I think if you can make it as well. Like, we've got a really good group of friends at the moment that are all really driven. My boyfriend's just gone and bought, like, thousands of dollars worth of camera equipment, and we're learning to write and finding mentors, people are actually really willing to help, actually, which is really cool, and just making it work, doing it full-time, which is cool.
Nice. And sliding the microphone along, tell us your background in the arts.
Yes, I started first on screen in 2018. I was in a Māori drama series called Ahikaroa, so I was on there for a season. And then I scored an audition with Te Pō for a play called Black Ties that was an incredible experience, and was able to tour around Australia and New Zealand. A show about an Aboriginal family and Māori family marrying into each other, but all this crazy stuff happens. But I've pretty much been involved with Te Pō since, and been doing heaps of incredible projects with them, and they're really supportive of growing other skills, so they're really pushing me to do other things. So I'm kind of like, I would say that I'm training at the moment.
Like, even literally, though.
Yeah,
we go
literally.
To classes with Tainui on a Thursday night.
And they're pushing me to do other things like write and like give directing a go as well. So,
And you got your funding to do some writing.
Yes, and we just got funding. We're doing a show, hopefully for Auckland Arts Festival if they take us in, called Kōpū, which is a show that celebrates your ira wahine, which is feminine energy, and what that looks like. Yeah, rock on. So we just got some money to develop that. So that's probably going to be something that's going to take up a lot of my time. So I'm in the learning phase, but I've been experiencing a lot of things, and I've been working in the arts full time for the last 3 years, so I'm really, really thankful for the opportunities that my mentors have given me and stuff. So that's pretty much me.
The learning phase, does that ever stop, Emma?
Never.
I don't know about you. I've learned a lot just in the last show again. You think you know it all, and then some 12-year-old kid will teach you something, and you think,
that's right.
Yeah, you never stop learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's when the creativity dies anyway, so
you
don't want to stop learning, do you?
No. So you're standing at the New Zealand Film and Theatre Awards, and you're about to win the best award of your life. Who are you thanking so far in your journey?
I would definitely thank God, and I would thank Māori. Māori who have always encouraged each other to do things and to take a stand in what we want to say and what we believe in. So I would thank all those that came before us and all those who came after us.
Nice. Beautifully said, Emma. Acacia, who are you thanking at your awards night?
Definitely my parents. I make a lot of work for my mum. She passed away when I was a teenager, so a lot of that has been my driver to keep going. So my dad, my grandparents, all my aunties and uncles, my partner, Richard, who's just so just driven and awesome and supportive. So many people. my sister, because she calls me out whenever I'm doing, she's the one person that I can, like, if I'm doing bad acting, she'll be like, nah, that's shit.
We all need a critic in our lives.
She's the best at that. And then Tainui and all the tutors at Toi Whakaari were amazing. And weirdly, I mentioned them before, but the owners of Coco's Cantina, they were able to be my whānau when I moved to Auckland, and they were able to really just hold a space and believe that it was not going to be forever that I was working at the restaurant, and give me a place to be and really be cheerleaders for That's while nice. I was out there auditioning, and it was hard for a year, and you know, so them as well.
Yeah, that's cool. That's nice to hear. Yeah.
Because a lot of people give actors jobs.
Yeah.
And are kind of like, yeah, we'll give you time off for shows. And then as soon as you start asking for time off for auditions and shows, it's like, you've got a roster. What do you mean you want time off?
Honestly, Renee Coulter over there, she's just, they don't actually want people to be just a waitress. They're really like, nah.
But then they're seeing the bigger picture. You know,
exactly.
You're going to give so much more to them knowing you're in that environment. So give them a good plug. Where are they?
They're on Kay Road, and they all of their food, right, is locally sourced, free range, organic. It is also absolutely very delicious, and you'll get a lot of sass from your waiters and waitresses, which is a lot of fun as well. The customer is not always right, so don't go there if you're going to complain.
That's a challenge.
Well, it feels like a piece of theatre in itself.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm not going to ask you about your Oscars yet, you two, because you've got a little bit further to go in your graduation plan. But how are you going to measure success? So something like this show you're doing, how do you as a team measure whether it was successful or not, which is a very hard question in theatre?
I think it's, for me, it's like if you can affect one person in the audience, if you can change just one person's point of view about something, like, you know, that's success. It's like, it's, you don't have to sway an entire 50 people onto suddenly believing this new thing and like, oh my goodness, I've just seen the light because of your show. It's like if just one person comes up to you and says, hey, I thought this, but now I'm thinking maybe I need to look more into this. Like, that's so important. So I think success is like just the little things and how, yeah, you can affect change in people's lives in just like the smallest of ways.
Nice. Well, follow that one.
I mean, I think I've got two standards of measure. The first is the entire team having fun, which I think is something that can be very easily lost. As soon as you're not enjoying what you're doing, something's going to die in that production. And it hasn't died yet, as far as I can see. We're still having a lot of fun learning together and growing together and creating so many amazing things together. And I think my second measurement will be the result of the relaxed show. I can't wait for, you know, 3:10 on Saturday and to see how that's gone down, because boy am I excited for it.
And what's the next project once this one's packed up and put away? What's next on the course?
So next semester it will just be all the academic stuff that we didn't do this semester. So it'll be the dissertation, ethics in theatre, which I'm very excited for. Practically, I guess I'll personally be probably doing some stuff for Stray Theatre Company. Mm-hmm. They've got their main bill coming up next semester, which they haven't announced yet. and also Stir Fried, which is their annual short play competition. If anyone's listening and wants to throw a piece in, I'm sure they'll be opening submissions soon.
Yeah, so. Both of us have been in the committee in the past, so we're definitely advocates for Stray Theatre Company. I think they've been on the show a few times.
We love
Stray. So.
Nice. That's brilliant. All right, we're going to take a quick music break and then carry on chatting with our studio guests. Here now is the Kiwi band Teaks. Whoops, when Stephen presses a right button.
I wish I had the strength to tell you how I feel. I wish I was brave like the soldier on the battlefield. See, my heart, it races every time you're around, and I try so hard to speak, but I can't seem to make a sound. I know that if I walk away, I wonder what you would say, and if you felt the same. But if you don't, it's okay. I'll be right here waiting if you change your mind. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care about my pride. If it's 1,000 years or 1,000 more, I'll be waiting. Darling, all I ask, please remember me. Please remember me. I wish I had rhythm. Maybe I'd ask you. I could hold you like my father holds my mother's hand. I know that if I walk away, I wonder what you would say. It's okay. I'll be right here waiting if you change your mind. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care about my pride. If it's 1,000 years or 1,000 more, I'll be waiting. And darling, all I ask, I'll be right. Change your mind. I don't care how long it
Remember Me by the wonderful group Teeks. Beautiful song. I love that one. Really nice. Different sound. Got a real mix tonight, Emma.
Yeah, you've done such a good job.
Speaking of good jobs, some wonderful people have sent us things this week to our inbox to tell us what's coming up. Emma, what have we got first of all?
No, just wait 2 seconds. I just dropped off my screen.
That's right. I can go first because Auckland Live are presenting Barrier Ninja and Sorry For Your Loss, a Matariki double bill on at the Herald Theatre at the Aotea Centre from the 19th to the 21st of June. Now, Barrier Ninja is a verbatim theatre documentary style piece, while For Your Loss is an autobiographical story. So two very different pieces. They are taking place 19th to the 21st of June at the Herald Theatre. Tickets are available from Auckland Live.
And it's the time for the 48-hour Film Festival Grand Final screening at the Civic Theatre, happening on the 22nd of May at 7:30pm. So this is your chance to get along and see those 18 film finalists. And you can find out more about that with tickets available through Ticketmaster or at 48hours.co.nz.
Excellent. And the judge has been announced for the Walters Prize 2021 opening that started yesterday at the Auckland Art Gallery. Congratulations to Kate Fole, who is director of Mama PS1 in New York, who has been appointed as the judge for this year's Walters Prize, New Zealand's Contemporary Art Prize, at Auckland Art Gallery. She says she's looking forward to working with New Zealand's top contemporary artists. Check it all out now at Auckland Art Gallery, with the prize winner dinner being held on the 7th of August. So go and check it out daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Auckland Art Gallery.
And if you are a writer out there, did you know that the New Zealand Society of Authors have 4 cash grants to support New Zealand writers? Each person will receive a $5,000 grant to help you research your latest fiction or non-fiction writing project, and these grants are open to all New Zealand writers. You can find out more about that by going to CLNZ, that's the Copyright Licensing New Zealand, or to the New Zealand Society of Authors, NZSA, to find out how to apply.
Fantastic. Now, returning with a 16-day program of inspiring and dynamic Māori, Pacific and Global Indigenous live performance, the 6th ever Kia Mau Festival is taking place in Wellington from the 4th to the 19th of June. Packed with art forms that encompass the complexity of live experience, it is championing the power of Indigenous artistry. You can check all the details out at their website www.kiamaufestival.org, and tickets are available through iTicket.
A dazzling crystal waka by artist Ruben Patterson is to be presented at the Auckland Art Gallery in June. Now, this dazzling waka is made up of hundreds of shimmering crystals and is going to be 10 metres high. It's pretty impressive, to be revealed at the Art Gallery on this Thursday, the 17th of June. It was commissioned by Auckland Art Gallery and the Edmondson Trust. Ruben Patterson has created a major new sculpture that will rise vertically out of the gallery's forecourt pool.
Cool.
That sounds pretty amazing. So you want to get on in. And as I said, it starts on the 17th of June. So go and check it out at Auckland Art Gallery. And that's all.
Brilliant. If you've got something coming up, send us an email to kickarts1, that's the numeric one, at gmail.com. We'd love to promote it on here, or even better, join us like these fabulous people in the studio tonight. Come and talk to us about your project. Email us kickarts1@gmail.com and we'll try and give you a plug through our social media sites as well.
Awesome.
Excellent. So, what's next on the horizon? That is my next question for you all. Whether it's post-uni, post the show, what you've got, what else is coming up this year? Can you give away any secrets?
Tuakoi and I, like I said, are going to be going around the North Island with Racists Anonymous, and also a kids show called Mahi Orahi, or Kia Orahi, based off Kia Orahi, the game. And, yeah,
And then for me, personally, after that, actually both of us, we both got writing funding, so I'm going to be writing a show called Ukaipo, and developing that, which is really exciting, and hopefully making a feature film with an amazing man called Amabir Singh, who I've just had the pleasure of working with over the last month as well. So there's lots of exciting things.
When you're taking the show north...
Yes.
What are you expecting the difference to be? I mean, I'm imagining quite a different audience.
Yeah.
How are you shaping it to travel?
Well, we don't quite know what it's going to look like yet, but it could be interactive, is that right?
Well, like, I hope it'll be the same. You know, it'll be every night, for at least for Racist Anonymous, will be very different, depending on who's in the space. I shouldn't say this, but our actual ideal amount of people would be a kind of about 20 or 30, actually,
right,
to get a really immersive experience. You know, so I think probably as we go further north, those smaller numbers we're kind of expecting. Maybe genuine community hall vibes, not sure, rather than trying to dress down a theatre space to look like a community hall.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I am looking forward to connecting with our schools up north in Northland and with our kids. And that was what was in my head when I brought it up. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
And then the kids' shows in schools in Kurukohopapa. So I can kind of picture what that will look like. And I think it'll be... It's a very funny kids' show as well, so I think it's going to just be a lot of
joy. Hopefully they like it.
Yeah.
Because kids are the hardest critics ever, so.
Yeah.
Hardest and most honest, right?
Yeah. Yep, they start talking, you're done. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. No relaxed or non-relaxed if kids start talking. Yeah. And what about you two? What other projects do you have outside of your uni world? I'm guessing you're involved in other things to keep you out of mischief.
I mean, I'm personally taking a bit of a break, trying to sort of get my life in balance, and I'll see what projects come my way in the later half of the year. But at the moment, just trying to focus on getting those good grades.
Excellent. Tutors listening.
Get my degree. Woo!
Get degrees.
Yeah, probably just do some things with Stray Theatre Company and... Oh, yeah, and Alex also makes amazing masks, so doing a plug for you. She also makes the incredible masks. They're just amazing, so hopefully she's going to be doing some of that.
I'm going to be making masks.
What kind of masks do you make?
I make plaster masks, so it's sort of the same stuff that you use to, like, set a broken leg, and that's sort of modelled off plasticine mould, and then I paint them and make them look pretty.
So are they masks for wearing and acting, or are they more masks for decoration on your wall?
Mixture of both. I did the masks for Animal in 2019, which was at the basement, so that was a whole barnyard, and that's what really got me into it, because I needed to make about 30 in about a month, and they'd take about 2 or 3 days to make, so that was very fun. And I've made more for other shows since, but I've also made some decorative ones for family and friends because, you know, they can hang or they can go around your face. They're pretty versatile.
What was Animal all about? I mean, obviously a barnyard, got that, but I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, so Animal was a production directed by Arlo Green and Harriet Mayer, and it was an adaptation of George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Ah, okay.
It was, yes, very... Very gritty and very popular. Sold out, I think, a few days after tickets went up.
Nice.
Cool.
So, are we shameless plugging yet?
Definitely. Shameless plug. Give us all the details. Where can people head to find out more about your shows?
Well, you can look up our website, tipotheatre.co.nz.
Seems so.
It's so funny. But check out our Tipo Theatre website, Facebook page, Instagram. You can buy tickets on iTicket as well as the Comedy Fest website as well. So, yeah.
And you can get them at the door as well.
Tipo Theatre is out at Corbin Estate Art Centre.
Yeah.
And we were talking pre-show. We had Martin, the... director of the facility here a few weeks ago now.
Cool.
Well, actually, it was before...
It was last lockdown.
It was last lockdown, yeah.
Wow.
So this theatre's now open, but still a work in progress with other bits. So it's a cool space, multi-purpose space that's available.
Yeah. The theatre's all built, and then the rest of the building's going to happen later this year, which is cool.
Brilliant.
And your season dates for... racist anonymous.
18th to the 22nd, so that's this Tuesday through Saturday.
Yes. Come along.
Come along.
Don't be shy. Super fun.
Awesome. Excellent. And how do we find out about 2,401 objects?
So there is a Facebook page, 2,401 UAW Drama, and tickets are through Eventbrite, or for the relaxed show, it's emailing uoadramabookings@gmail.com. Yeah,
that's pretty much it. Please come along. We're a little cast of eight, so we are definitely trying to promote as much as we can. We've all been doing all the promoting ourselves. No big marketing budget, so we're just yes, thank you, Kikas. But yeah, no, definitely, yeah, head along to our Eventbrite, and we have some content up and some photos on our Facebook as well. And yeah, we're really excited. Our show dates are from the 20th to the 23rd, so Thursday to Sunday, 20th to the 22nd. So Thursday, no, I was right. this Thursday, coming Thursday till Sunday, and then our relax show is on the Saturday at 2 p.m.
Cool. And the studio is just off Simons Street in the Auckland CBD. There's parking in the ONG Glen building for a flat rate of $6 an hour, because you can't park anywhere for free.
Except for at Corbin's.
Yeah. Nice park. Speaking of relaxed, all of these performers are opening their shows in the next couple of days. They're actually doing pretty well tonight.
They are, but it's Sunday night. I bet they won't be, you know, as relaxed tomorrow morning when they're back in it.
We also are actors, so, I mean,
we're acting relaxed.
Fake it till you make it, right?
What have you got coming up this week, Emma?
Rehearsals of my own for Into the Woods, which is going well. We've got another 5 weeks till we open that. And then I'm flying down to Wellington to see the opening of Jersey Boys down there, because I didn't make it to the opening up here, so I'm going down to the opening for that one. And opening night of Mamma Mia and Papakura on Saturday night. So going from no shows to...
To busy again.
Yeah. Excellent. What about you?
No, recovery this week, quiet week this week, get life back into order post-show, and then surface again next week.
Nice.
Yeah. When does your Into the Woods open?
June. Late June. So I've still got a little while. Harlequin. Yeah. But we'll be on the show.
On the show promoting.
And we will be on a show promoting in a few more weeks.
Cool. And if you've got something you'd like to promote, do flick us a message to kickarts1@gmail.com. I'm going to end with one tough question, and I'm going to ask you two this question. If you could sit your 16-year-old self down, wasn't that long ago, sit them down.
Feels like a little
What would you say to them, knowing what you know now? This is like the most poignant closing of the show. Very important question. No pressure.
I would probably say, no matter what you do, you're always going to find people that care for you and support you. And just who cares what people think? Yeah. Yeah, that's what I say to any 16-year-old. Who cares what people think? Do what you want to do. It's all good. Have trust in the world and people will love you for who you are.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'd say reach out. Don't be afraid to trust that people care about you. And don't question yourself, and make work and get excited about things, and don't be afraid to share what you have, because it's actually very important.
I like that, make work.
Yeah.
At 16, start thinking about that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, make work.
There's so much going on. It's not just going to happen, eh?
No.
Well, not even, you know, that might sound depressing, but what you have to say is way more interesting than playing somebody else's character anyway, you know? Find your own voice, and starting at 16 is a great time to do that.
Beautiful. Yeah. Nicely said. Thank you, everyone, for being fantastic guests in our studio tonight.
Thank you.
Good luck with your shows ahead. We are going out tonight with a little bit of Lion King. Elton John singing his Circle of Life, as the Lion King is rearing into Auckland very soon. I see tickets are selling pretty fast, Emma.
Mm.
Quite pricey. Quite pricey, but we'll try and get along and support. So here it is. Make sure you have a fantastic week, and always remember to
kick some art.
The day we arrive on the planet,
in to the sun. There's more to be seen than can ever be seen. More to do than can ever be done. Some say eat or be eaten. Some say live and let live. But all are agree as they join the stampede. You should never take more than you give. In the circle of life, the wheel of fortune. If the leap by faith is the band of. And some of us soar to the stars. And some of us sail through our troubles. Some have to live with the scars. There's far too much to take in here. More to find than can never be found.